let me just start by introducing myself. My name is Bubba Boyd. I'm a recovered crystal meth addict and alcoholic. Been sober since May the 12th, 2008. And that's a long time for a junkie like me, man. I was thinking the other day, and I often complain to my fiance, my girlfriend, about how busy my week is out doing AA shit. And I'm like, they always call me at, you know, I do a lot of service work. I do service work at the hoity-toity treatment centers, and I do service work at the bottom, you know, the ones where you ain't got no money. I do service work all the time, and they're always calling me to listen to Fifth Steps, to come out and do a big book talk, to do this and that. And what I'd really rather be doing is playing golf, you know, or watching Netflix when it's too cold to play golf. And I'm like, damn. And I work in the industry. I do interventions and transports all across the country. And I'm never not in the trenches. And sometimes I'm like, God dang it. How come they're always calling me? How come I always got to go do something? I just wonder where everybody else is at that's supposed to be trying to stay sober one day at a time. Amen. And I'm like, but my phone always rings, and so my, in the midst of all this, I'm telling her, you know, I don't want to go listen to this Fifth. It's on a Saturday. See, here's the deal. At my house, I play golf Monday through Friday because my fiance works. She works in the treatment industry. She works Monday through Friday, and on Saturday and Sundays, it's her day off, so we got a deal that when if I'm not working, if I'm not traveling across the country, chasing some dope fiend around, then if I'm not working, I get to do whatever I want Monday through Friday till 5:30, and I'm home to be with her the rest of the time. And it's like, but on Saturday, they call me for a Fifth Step. I'm like, why didn't they call me Monday through Friday? I mean, because I'm not allowed to play golf on Saturday, but I'm allowed to go listen to a Fifth Step on Saturday. I'm like, damn, it's kind of a double standard, right? I'm like, and I'm complaining the whole time that I'm going. I got to go do this. And I get there, and I had 10-step something crazy crap with my sponsor because I'm active in Alcoholics, in the program Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Like the nightly review and the 10-step and carrying the message. And I get this phone call from my sponsor. It's about a 10-step the night before, which is ridiculous. Like I was pissed because they gave me cheese pizza at Little Caesars and I wanted pepperoni and got all the way home and found that I had the wrong pizza and they take the son of a bitch back. Right? And that's how I roll. I'm pretty self-centered, you know what I'm saying? They were lying. That's a whole nother deal. I'm not going to bore y'all with that 10-step, but it's pretty comical. But then he calls and I go, man, and so I go, well, here's the 10-step for you. I'm in the office waiting for the guy's waiting for me to do the Fifth Step. He's fixing to read tell me his life story, right? And I got him out there. I'm in the office and my sponsor calls and I'm like, you know, I don't know why I'm always busy doing AA stuff, man. I never get to do whatever I want. It's just like, does nobody else pass their phone number out? And it's like, damn, right. I'm in delusion that I'm the only one doing it. Let me just get that real clear. There's some people in this room that are doing it. We just don't do it at the same time, right? Same places. It's always about me, so I'm focused on me most all the time. And hopefully we'll get to talk about my two favorite subjects tonight after I tell this story. And my two favorite subjects are Bubba and God. And I get them confused all the time. Right. So he goes, why are you there doing it? Well, he says, so why did you say you'd come listen to that guy's Fifth Step? And I said, well, I don't want to shoot dope no more. He said, well, then hang up the phone and go do it. And that's exactly why I do it. Cause I don't want to shoot dope anymore. And I don't want another number. Anybody know what I'm talking about? 150-9297. I don't want no more 7 digits by my name, man. You know what I mean? I've been there and done that. And that's what I do when I shoot dope. I go to prison. I mean, if these guys I play golf with, and a lot of them drink, and they'll go, do you want to drink? I said, not unless it comes with a booking number. You know what I mean? I know what happens when I take a drink. Well, because the book tells me, it describes to me at the first part of the chapter to agnostics what it means an alcoholic is, right? If when I stop, I can't stay stopped, and when I drink, I drink too much, then I'm probably alcoholic. I'm probably suffering from something that only a spiritual experience will conquer, right? I'm real clear on what I am today. I'm real clear that I'm powerless over alcohol, and without a spiritual program of action, my life is unmanageable. And it's not unmanageable, like it's not on, my house is messy, and I don't wash my car, and I don't pay my bills, and I don't, and things run amok, and stuff getting re. Those are things that are unmanageable as well. Those are external consequences of my drinking and using. But I think what I'm trying to get clear on here is my life's unmanageable because I can't manage the decision to not take a drink or to not shoot dope. I'm driven by something that always takes me back to relief, right? I'm always seeking comfort. So before I get too into beating y'all over the head with a big book, by the way, I'm an unapologetic big book thumper. You know, I will slice your jugular with quote out of the big book if you come at me with some Miller Road bullcrap. I'll just. Hey, look, I'd rather hurt your feelings than step over your grave. Because what we're up against here, guys, is a life or death thing. Ain't nobody, I've seen people in here that I've seen before. There's people in here I've got loaded with before. At least one person I got high with in this room. And I may got high with a bunch of them, just wasn't aware of it. But there's at least one guy, we run him up in South Austin in this room. And there's also people that I've seen in this room, in this treatment center that I saw before, and they're in their back. And they're fortunate to be back in this place. And they're fortunate. They're not lucky. They're fortunate. Because, see, here's the deal. Oftentimes people leave and they don't get to come back. I don't know what happens to them. Well, I know what happens to them. Most of them die. So if you're here fresh off a relapse and you're alive, you better get your ass to work. Because don't be so arrogant to think you know what relapse looks like. Look, there's a lot of people go in the rooms and out of the rooms all the time, and we begin to think that that's what our relapse is going to look like. Don't be that arrogant. You might be the real deal, and you might get to pay the real price. You might get to, what the book calls it, make the supreme sacrifice rather than fight. And sometimes that costs. I'm sitting here, this guy, he remembers when I first got out of prison, I got a job, and I moved into a Christian sober home. Right, faith-based sober home. Look, I still go to that church. Don't get it messed up. I'm not bashing Christians in here. Right? And he says, you remember when we used to go hang out? I came to your sober house a couple of times. He's trying to sell me a bike. Now I remember the story. Trying to sell me a bike he stole or some bullshit. Right? Look, I didn't figure it all out, man. I figured it out after a few days. Right? And he says, so you're doing good, boom, boom, you're doing good, yeah. And I said, you know, come to think about it, it's me and one other guy. There were six of us in the sober home, but me and one other guy, the only two people are still breathing. Breathing. I'm not saying they're getting loaded. I'm saying they're dead. The house manager died, cirrhosis of the liver. A convict had done 18 years in prison, got out, and they sent him to our sober home on one of them government programs. He jumped parole and flew off to Florida and married some chick that he met online. This is when online dating costs money or whatever. And he drank himself to death within 6 months of being in Florida. One guy OD'd and died. I'm like, I'm pretty fortunate to be alive today. Right? What I'm fortunate is that I was going to tell my story, but now I'm kind of. Nothing ever goes the way you plan when you get behind the podium. I'm just going to let y'all know. And I wasn't nervous till I seen all you people in here, and I thought, whoa, shit, I'm in trouble here. I mean, you know what I mean? But the more I talk, the more y'all laugh at this tragic stuff that we find humorous in Alcoholics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous after we get sober. I know I'm in the right room. There's a bunch of dope fiends in here, and there's a bunch of precious metal recycle specialists in here. Well, I was a stainless steel guy myself. All three grades, cowboy. 417, 39. Y'all know what I'm talking about. And I'll still, and I'll get your copper too if you ain't looking. Yeah. Yeah. New copper, you know. That number one stuff, you know what I'm saying? 325 a pound, you know what I mean? That's how I roll, man. So I'm glad that there's a bunch of, I feel at home and in the room full of a bunch of people that I know have been where I've been. And I didn't steal copper in a jacket or a tie, and I didn't have alligator boots on when I did it. I mean, I had one flip-flop, one tennis shoe, whatever, you know what I mean? I was rock and roll. You know, I'm that kind of guy that when he gets his, look, I don't even smoke crack. But I smoke crack one time for 6 months. Look, man, I woke up broke and out of money. I had them Rumberg toes, you know what I'm saying? Y'all know what I'm talking about. When a bunch of people done got them toes. You know, you walk so long and so hard in a pair of flip-flops, your toes swell up. I don't know what it is. Must be the chore or something. I break out in Rumberg toes. But that's what happens to guys like me, man. I drink and I use for the effect produced, man. I like the way it makes me feel. And I know it's injurious, but I'm going to do it anyway. That's how I roll. I mean, you know what I mean? Once you light the match, I'm gone, man. It's over. So I'm real glad to be here. I will tell you that I was raised I was at my mother and dad's wedding, and I was at the divorce, and I was at every fist fight they had from in between. I was raised by people that drank, heavy drinkers, alcoholics. My mother is 83 years old, and she's drank herself to a nursing home. A couple years ago, she about drank herself to death, and we took her to the hospital, and they put her in a nursing home. And that's where she'll spend the rest of her life because she can't be left alone. She'll drink herself to death. I got sisters that's been to prison. I've been to prison. I've got an uncle that's been to prison. Federal prison, Mexican federal prison, TDC, Fort Worth federal. I mean, he's been everywhere. He's gone now, but I mean, I got an uncle that, I mean, we rock and roll at my house. And I was raised by a bunch of, my mother worked my whole life. I don't know if my mom ever had a job that I'm aware of that wasn't behind a bar in a beer joint. Anybody know what a beer joint is? Not them squirrely drinks where they serve beer and Coke setups. That ain't even Coke setup. Who reckon? Anybody know what a Coke setup is? You know what I mean? Yes, right. And with some ice so you can mix your own drinks, right? And that's what I was, and they all drank. I had three sisters on my mom's side of the family. They all drank. They all used. One cooked dope. Not that dope you got now. I'm talking about that good, good dope. Not that methamphetamines they're spreading out there now. I'm talking about it takes like 4 days to cook it. You know, P2P, the good stuff. You know, half a gram lasts you 4 days. Even for a lightweight, beginner. I mean, a gram of dope was a lot of dope back then. And I was raised around that, all those people, and there was domestic violence. My sisters, I've seen my sisters get their ass whooped with, I mean, just emergency room stuff, ambulance stuff. I've been there when it happened, you know, and we're all huddled up in the closet of the double wide, hiding, waiting, hoping they don't come kill us too. You know what I'm saying? And I've seen it my whole life, and I've had a sister that had an alcoholic seizure, man, about died, she tried to swallow her tongue in the front yard. I mean, I've been around that my whole life. I was also around it when it looked like it was like they were having a good time. Like they getting ready on Friday nights to go to the bar, and my youngest sister's 61 years old, and I'm 45, so they're all older than me, and so they're going out with mom, they're going to the Chaparral and to the Silver Dollar and to the Lumberyard. This old school bar is in Austin. No one's laughing. No one remembers that. The Windmill Lounge. They're getting ready to go honky tonky, man, and they made it look like a good time. And they'd come back with them wild stories, and I thought, man, I can't wait till it's my turn. to get dressed and go party with my, I mean, that was like a family rite of passage to get to, you know, start drinking beer, start doing what they do, right? And it was, I guess, since I'm not really a clinical type guy, but since I've started working in this, this is not really an industry, but this industry, I mean, I used to be a sheet metal worker. That's a damn industry. You know what I'm saying? Bang, 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 dust and nails and screws. But in this industry, you hear things like words like trauma, right? I'm pretty sure, I don't know, I don't know if I was traumatized, but some of the stuff I got to witness would, it'd be traumatic for your normal family that, you know, the white picket fence, if they seen their sister get hit with a ball peen hammer in the back three times, it'd freak them out. They had PTSD. They didn't even have PTSD back then. You know what I mean? It was like the Wild West in my childhood. It was, you name it, it was like you, just when you think it can't get any wilder, some other crazy stuff would show up. You know what I mean? I wish there was one instance in my life. I got three sisters that are outlaws like me. And I got two sisters on my dad's side of the family. One's got a PhD and one's got a master's and she works in Hollywood. She's a set designer on some of the biggest shows there is. I mean, she's won Emmys and so like the PhD and master's and then outlaws and I'm like, and since I'm half over here and half, I'm like a hybrid idiot. You know what I'm saying? I'm not real smart and real wild at the same time. I got a little of both. I'm going to get it. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to figure it out. I got a brain that's constantly trying to figure out the answer and then protect the answer. You know what I'm saying? It's always working. It's got two purposes in my life. To find the answer to everything and then protect itself and protect the answer at all costs, right? And that's how I've been rolling my whole life. I used to, when I was a kid, my dad is like my very best friend when I was a kid. I mean, he drank black velvet whiskey and he would buy a Coke setup because if you bring your your drink in the your whiskey in the bar, you had to buy at least one Coke setup. But he just drank it straight out of the bottle, and then he'd take a sip of Coke. You know, he's an old rodeo cowboy. My dad was inducted to the Texas Rodeo Cowboy Hall of Fame in 1999, and he was my hero. And before I tell this story, I'll tell you what I wanted to be when I grew up was a baseball player. You know what I mean? But I couldn't bat, and I couldn't catch, and I couldn't throw. So, man, I got some cool outfits. Man, I still love them pinstripes and Yankees. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if I like the New York Yankees or just their outfits. I don't know. But I wanted to be. I always wanted to do something different. I always wanted to be special. So I rode bulls instead. It was a lot easier than baseball. And my dad was. We was around. He knew a bunch of cowboys, and my whole family. On several sides, both sides of my several sides. Several sides. I'm not joking. I got several sides. I got a nephew that calls. I got a brother-in-law that married two of my sisters. You know what I'm saying? Right. My nephew calls him Uncle Daddy Bobby. You know what I mean? So I mean. That's how we roll over on my mom's side of the family. We do it right, you know what I mean? And he married each one. I mean, I don't know what's going on with that. He was married to both of them about 15 years apiece. I don't know. It's good on my side of the family. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that, but that's kind of funny, isn't it? I mean, I'll give you some background. I wish, of all the things that I'm telling you about my family, they're crazy. I got cousins that are crazier than I am. They love me. And I love them. I never once my whole life felt like that I wouldn't. I never once by my family felt like they didn't love me. I never once in my life felt like my family didn't have my best interests at heart. Not once in my life. These outlaws, I felt like I felt at home when I was with my family, and I felt welcome. I never felt shunned. I never felt less than because my family was who they are. I thought the rest of the people that didn't have a family like mine just got screwed, I guess. I got lucky. I got a fun family. Excitement always. I never once felt that I wasn't loved or accepted or wanted or cared for or left behind. I mean, they always just loved. We loved each other. And I just thought that, you know, some people were doctors and lawyers, and I just wasn't going to be that breed of people. I was just going to be that, you know, run-of-the-mill redneck. You know what I mean? And I was okay with that. But my dad was pretty well known in the rodeo world. And I also remember May the 12th, 2008, my sobriety birthday. February 28th, 1982 was the very first time I rode a bull. And I remember, of course, my birthday because it's about me. And I remember the day my dad died. Those are the 5 or 6 days that I remember, but they had a lot of impact on me. But I started riding junior bulls when I was a kid, and damn, I was good at it. And I was pretty good around the bull rope, around the arena. I rode it in high school. I messed around in high school, barely passed. Anybody ever get out of high school after you do your final exam and you get an extra credit? You get like an extra credit paper to do after everybody else has graduated so you can get your diploma. I got like a couple of extra credit assignments after final exam day to give me enough points to get out of high school. I went to high school, Pflugerville High School. I messed around somehow, and I had a friend of mine who knew some people or whatever, and I ended up getting a full scholarship, rodeo scholarship. And I was actually the first person on my mom's side of the family that ever walked across the stage and graduated high school. I was the first person in her whole... I mean, they're trying to tell me that they only had 9 grades back then, but I don't believe that shit. All we had was 9 grades, and then you had to go to work. Whatever, you know what I mean? Well, I was the first person that ever went to 12 grades of high school, walked across the stage at UT, and got a diploma. Boy, I was messed up that day. Because that's what I do in high school. I'm snort meth and do fun shit. But I remember, and my dad got me to doing this, and I rodeoed my whole life, and me and my dad, we traveled everywhere together. And we went from, I mean, you just name it. We've been to Arkansas, Oklahoma, Mississippi, Louisiana, all over Texas, and he'd take me anywhere I wanted to go if it had to go to a rodeo. And he was like my best friend. And I remember one day he told me, he said, well, if we're going to do this rodeo thing, he said, you're going to need you a traveling partner. And I said, yeah, I need a traveling partner. He said, well, I'm going to be your traveling partner. He said, and traveling partners, they do everything for each other. You know, he paid my entry fees, of course, because I didn't have no money. I was 14, 15 years old, But he told me, you're going to call me Muscles. Hey, look, he was about 5'3", weighed 130 pounds. I don't know why they called him Muscles, man. Don't ask me. I couldn't tell you. But he used to ride racehorses, and he rodeoed with the Steiners all his life. And he said, I'm going to call you Bubba. And we're going to be partners, and we're going to take care of each other from here on out. We're going to travel everywhere together. And I'll be damned if we didn't set out every weekend somewhere, and we were rodeoing. And I got belt buckles to prove it. I didn't buy that damn thing. I went everywhere, and I won a lot. And I ended up getting a full scholarship to rodeo in college. And so I think that the drugging kind of took a back seat for a minute. You know what I mean? What I would do is I would go to college and rodeo during the week. You know, we'd go to college, and then if I wasn't going to a college rodeo, I'd go back home to Austin and do a bunch of dope, and then I'd go back to college, and I was trying to keep it a secret. Wouldn't nobody know I was using a bunch of dope. But so me and my dad, we rodeoed my whole life. And he was my best friend. And he would teach me things. He would say things like, you never got to remember the truth. Only the lies you have to remember. And I'm like, yeah, that's some cool moral and philosophical convictions of glory. He's feeding me this stuff like a coward dies a thousand deaths. And the brave man, he just dies once. And all you got to do is tell. I remember, did anybody ever have a parent that, like, I used to live in a neighborhood out in the country, had a gravel road, and we'd have rock fights, and somebody's window always got put out in a rock fight. Or play baseball in someone's backyard, and someone always hit a golf ball or a baseball through somebody's window, and he would say, did you break that window, boy? I'd say, and I'd be scared. Look, my parents never whipped me. I don't know. I know I talk real disciplinarian, but I ain't never had a whipping. And I'd say, yeah, I did. I did it. I threw that rock and put that window out. He would say, well, I can't punish you for being honest. And so later in life, when he asked me them tough questions, I'd go, you doing dope? I'd go, no, sir. He'd go, well, I can't punish you for being honest. I learned how to lie. You know, and it got easy to tell him these lies, right? And look, here's the deal. By the time I got old enough to know better, my sister done been in prison 3 times. I had every example of how not to live your life, and you'll do just fine. And I had my dad trying to teach me all about life as we traveled around the road, down the road together. We were somewhere all the time together, and he became my best friend. And I love that man, right? And he was my hero. In the meantime, from college to 4 or 5 years later, I ended up getting married. And I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I mean, we can tell you how many people are very resourceful that every time you screw some crap up, for some reason, you always rebuild it. I burn it down and build it back. Burn it down and build it back. Burn it. I mean, I can make some stuff happen on my own. You get me sober, I can get me a job, I can get me a girl, I can get me a cell phone, I can get me a piece of junk car. And I can maintain for just a little while, and then it's a mess, and I burn it all down, throw it all away, and I get it all back again. In the meantime, my dad was saying to me, after I did this numerous times, went through a marriage, lost visitation to my kids, to my one kid, right? You do all that, and your dad finds out that you're using it, and he goes, man, I don't know about y'all, but anybody ever have anybody tell y'all that, man, and they pull you to the side and they're trying to help you, you know, froth the emotional appeal, and they say things like, you're the one person I've ever seen, you're the one guy, you're that guy that has more natural ability, more try. You can do anything if you try hard enough. There ain't nothing, I know that you're the guy, there ain't nothing you can't do. You can do anything you want. I've seen you do it. What you need to do, you're not trying hard enough. If you try hard, just like when you rodeo, you can beat this thing. And I'm saying to myself, I'm tapped out. I got nothing. I got nothing for this, man. What's he mean, try harder? I'm giving it 100%. I ain't got 110. All I got's 100. And I'm giving it 100%, and I ain't got nothing to beat this, man. It's always rebuild, catastrophe, rebuild, failure. It's always, and I'm like, what do you mean, try harder? And I'm a cowboy, and I ride bulls, and I'm like, and I'm going to these AA meetings, or I'm going to these treatment centers, and they're saying, you can't do it on your own. It's impossible. And I'm saying to them, you don't get it. I've been doing impossible shit my whole life. I've been going places where nobody else in that whole town thinks I'm going to get it done, and I get it done. I get that done for a living. I'm doing impossible stuff for a living. Don't tell me I can't. Watch me, I will. And I did this over and over. Here's what I'm trying to say is, I about tried myself to death. I tried myself right to the penitentiary. And I promised my dad over and over that I was going to do it this time. I promised him over and over. The man that I love more, there's still not a man alive that I'll think I'll ever love as much as I love my father. I remember the last promise I made him. The last promise I made my dad, he was dying on his deathbed, lung cancer. And I said to him, you know how when you talk to somebody who's dying, I mean, maybe you don't. Or you know how when you go to say something and you really mean it and you just look them in the eye and before any words come out, there's tears come out first. And you're looking at them and you're like, and you say, I'm done. I promise you, Dad, I'm done this time. And my dad was the kind of guy that everywhere he went, people respected him. Because when he said he was going to be somewhere, he was there. When he said he could loan you some money, he had it. He was one of the guys always giving. No one lied to Muscles, and he didn't lie to them. And you know, I told him that I promised him that I was done this time. And you know that I look back on it now, because hindsight's always more clear than the present moment. And I remember him probably telling me the only lie I ever heard him tell. I wonder what that lie was. That lie was, I believe you, son. I believe you this time. And now I can die in peace. Right? And we suffer from a progressive disease, right? So 4 months later, I'm drunk in the parking lot at the funeral home because I can't bury my dad sober. It's killing me. And I buried him, and not 4 months later, after I took that drink in the parking lot of the funeral home, right up here, Travis Unit, TDC, 1509297, 4 months after he died, I'm in prison. It just took me 4 months. I think that was that crack binge in there somewhere, but I'm in prison. And I'm like, man, it's pretty progressive. And I remember I didn't have to do that much time, just 8 months. No big deal, right? I've been arrested 19 times. 8 months ain't nothing. I should have stayed in Travis County. It was a lot easier. I thought TDC was going to be easier, but I was way mistaken. I just thought I was tough. You know what I mean? All 123 pounds of me. I weigh 175 today. That's how I rolled up in there, thinking I was cool. You know what I mean? A few tattoos and a mohawk. Yeah, I had a mohawk. Thought I was a cool cat. Well, I got released January the 12th, a year later, which was exactly the same day that he died before. And so I'm leaving there and thinking, man, this is crazy. This is not coincidental. You can't plan. I mean, you don't plan when you leave. I leave there to the year to the day after he died. And I said, okay. So I get a redo. I get one more chance at this deal. And I remember leaving there and going to this apartment complex where my sister was living. And I was sleeping on a cot. I hadn't slept on a real mattress in I don't know how long. I ain't slept before that in I don't know how long. You know, I finally had a pillow that was cool. You know what I mean? And toothbrush, full-length toothbrush and the whole nine yards, you know. Hand soap, you know, it's cool. And I remember walking back and forth to that church, and they were having this, and I was going to this church, and I remember one day I was walking, they had this meeting at this church, or celebrate recovery or something, and I remember I was walking over there, and anybody ever like, look, I ain't hit a lick in 8 months. I was medically unassigned. I was cool. I ain't hit a lick in almost 10 months. I ain't done anything you even have to stretch for. But I felt like I'd been taken out behind the woodshed and drug around by, I mean, just whooped on. I was hurting, physically in pain internally, and it was hurt. Anybody ever just, I wasn't right. Something wasn't right. Something wasn't right with me. I wasn't good. It wasn't good, right? And it dawned on me at that moment that a drink wasn't going to fix what was wrong with me. And a shot of dope wouldn't touch it. And I went, I better go back to AA. I better go back to AA. I'm like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to this spiritual temple. I ain't getting it. I need to go somewhere where people are like me. And I went to a meeting. I went to the sober home, and they said, you don't got to go to meetings here. I was wanting them to give me a card. I see them people sign them cards. I was looking for some direction. And he said, well, we just got to go to church here, and you'll be fine. Church once a week, Bible study, whatever, and then you're good. I'm like, no, I need to go to an AA meeting. And they sent me on the bus, number 53, down to Club 101. And I walked in there, and I got a sponsor, and I started working the steps. I didn't know that my sponsor was a... I didn't care who it was. I was going to go give AA a real shot this time. I wasn't just going to sit in AA and expect something to happen for me. I was going to actually do what a sponsor told me to do. I ain't done that ever. Ever. I went to a lot of meetings, learned a bunch of cool shit to say, drink coffee, drink what they drink now, hot tea and cold coffee with all the hot chicks at the fancy places, the fancy coffee shops, you know, got their laptops out and doing all that cool shit and flowers and all that. I did all that. I got a sponsor that was sponsored by a man who's a legend, and we went at that work. And here's how I went at that work. I went at that work like my life depended on it. Because something was wrong with me. 10 months sober, and I said, shot of dope don't fix this. And I went at that work, and we read together from cover to cover. We didn't read past 164. The program's in the first 164. And we wrote when it said to write, and we prayed when it said to pray. And there were several times he would say stuff like, power of choice. You don't have a choice whether you use or not. And I'm like, man, come on, I'm a cowboy. Tell me I don't have a choice. He actually offended me a couple of times, and I stood up in one of them fancy coffee shops to slam my fist on the table, and I said, are you trying to offend me? Tell me I can't. I mean, he's telling me I can't. Tell me I won't. I will. Right? And I said, he said, no, man, I'm not telling you nothing. I'm just turning a few statements into questions. What you're having an experience with is what defeats you, and that's self. Self's what's killing you, cowboy. And I thought to myself right then internally, what? And I look at it now, that cowboy attitude saved my life. I said, I'll show him I can. I'll show this guy, this cowboy, can do what he says. In spite of myself, I had an experience with God. Now look, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous from a church-based sober home. I had a belief in God when I got here. It about killed me, believing in God. But what I got when I went through the steps with that man was an experience with God, and that changed the game for me. You can believe all you want. I came here tonight for an experience with God and with you. Because if you truly want to experience God, you got to serve Him. And I had an experience in Alcoholics Anonymous in the program AA. And we read that book, and we got to the end of that book. We read Working with Others, and I go, now what do we do? And he said, you're going right across here, and you're going in that place over there, and you're going to tell your story to a bunch of convicts. Convict. And I went in there and I shared my experience with that work and with my belief systems for about 30 minutes, and it set my ass on fire, and I've been on fire ever since. For the power of God, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a way of life that has given me an abundance at a banquet that I never dreamed was possible for a dope fiend like me. And that's how, and that is it. Because life's a banquet. I don't know why everybody's starving to death. I don't know why. I mean, sound asleep to the truth. That's why we want to stay asleep. It's easier to be asleep. I don't think so. I need to be awake. My spirit needs to be awake. I need to be in reality. Because that's where dreams come true. In reality. And that's where I try to stay on a daily basis. And I hear things in Alcoholics Anonymous like, you can't keep what you have unless you give it away. I don't think that's the truth. My experience tells me is you never receive it unless you give it away. You didn't get to have it unless you're willing to give it away. And look, I know this may not be, this may be some kind of different AA than you've ever heard, but it's the only AA that I know is the AA in this book. And there ain't no secret handshake. There ain't no secret way. There ain't no special sponsor. There ain't no special nothing that I got to do to get this. You don't have to do anything special to get free like me. Because I'm free. I'm free right now as I've ever been in my life. And I'm not talking about circumstantial free. I'm talking about free. Because I remember when I walked out of that prison, and I should have been the happiest man in Austin, Texas that day. Because I was a free man. But I wasn't free. I was a captive to self. It was killing me. The book don't tell me alcohol kills me. It's just self. That's what kills me. Self will run riot. I'm bound up. I did this work and I got free. I continue to do this work and I try to stay free. Not attached to what you think. I'm pretty sure I'm attached to what you think. Don't get me wrong. I'm not walking on water when I leave here. I promise you that. I got about 5 minutes. Here's what happens for people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's what I think. Just my opinion. May offend you. I hope it does. I hope anything that I say might disturb you about your alcoholism. Maybe get you off your butt and do some work. Because there's people dying every day that don't do no work. And maybe it's not about you. Maybe it's about somebody who's going to hear you behind a podium. Or hear you say something. Maybe it ain't got nothing to do with you. Here's who Alcoholics Anonymous, here's what happens. It does not work for people who need it. It don't work for people who want it. But it works 100% of the time for the people who do it. That's who it works for. And that's my experience. Because I remember, I've been in and out, bounced around, in and out of the rooms, ain't done nothing, kept getting loaded. Lucky to be alive. I rock and roll when I get on it. If you could fly a spaceship with a pair of tweezers, I'd be an astronaut right now. That's how I roll, man. That's the kind of dope fiend I do, man. Y'all know I'm the guy nobody wants to get loaded with. I'm pluck, 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 pluck. I never dreamed that I'd be a homeowner. I'm a homeowner, man. I'm a three-time felon. I'm a homeowner. I'm driving a brand new car. It's financed in my name. I steal cars. I drove a stolen car for 6 months. I didn't know it had a different license plate on the front and deal on the back. I got pulled over. Hey, some bitches wrote me a ticket. You know what I mean? I'm driving a brand new car financed in my name, man. And you know what? If they take it away, I'm going to be okay, man. If I don't got that house, I'm going to be okay. You know why I got that house? Because I'm okay whether I got it or not. I'm okay. You know when you're going to be okay? When you realize you already are okay. That's when you're going to be okay. And this don't cost nothing. You ain't got to be special to get this. There's power available to the powerless. Because if you got power, you don't need power. There's power like I got access to for anybody in this room who's powerless. You better dump the cup out, man. You better pour it out. Don't worry about filling it back up. Just dump it out. It'll get filled. And you'll get filled. So I don't know how I got on that rant. I get a little fired up. I hope we don't set the fire alarms on in some bitch in a minute, but I will. I'll light it up. I don't know if my life, I don't know if my, I still don't know today, and I'll close with this, if my life depends on the work that I do in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I work at it like it does, and I've been given a life that I didn't even want when I got here. And if just not drinking was all I was going to get, I'm drinking. There's bigger miracles happening every day in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. They ain't got a damn thing to do with a drink or a shot of dope. Thank you for letting me be part of your meeting. God bless all of you.